Chapter 1. Two words and life changes forever. Nothing new for a criminal defense lawyer. This time, however, Jack Switek wasn't waiting outside a jury room for a verdict of not guilty. He was rehearsing his most important line. I do. Jack straightened the white boutonniere in his lapel and adjusted his bow tie in the bathroom mirror. His hand was shaking as he brushed the sleeve of his tuxedo jacket, shedding the raindrops that he'd carried indoors. He wasn't sure why he was so nervous. For a guy whose love life could have filled an entire volume of Cupid's Rules of Love and War, Idiot's Edition, he should never have expected a wedding without glitches. Plan A would have been picture perfect. Bride and groom standing barefoot on a sandy beach, a canopy of white sails and colorful orchids overhead, the turquoise waters of an underwater national park glistening in the background. Mid-September, however, was the height of Florida's hurricane season, and their Saturday afternoon ceremony became a race against Mother Nature. They lost. Just as the mother of the bride was escorted to her seat, Key Largo was hit by a storm straight out of its namesake movie starring Bogey and Bacall. Soaked guests ran to their cars through a wind-driven downpour. Band after band of torrential rain blew ashore, making it pointless to wait out a tropical storm that stretched from Miami to Havana. The ceremony was moved a few miles north, indoors, to Sparky's Tavern, an old gas station that had been converted into the last watering hole between the mainland and the Florida Keys. The proud owner was Theo Knight, a former gangbanger from Miami's ghetto who'd survived death row and then named his bar Sparky's, a double-barreled flip of the bird to Florida's old electric chair, nicknamed Old Sparky. Actually, it was a fitting place for the wedding. Jack had presented the DNA evidence to prove Theo innocent, and the down payment on Sparky's had come from Theo's compensation for having come so close to execution that they'd fed him a last meal and shaved his head and ankles to attach the electrodes. "Ready, dude?" asked Theo. He was the best man.
"I do," said Jack. "I mean, yes."
Jack led the way from the men's room, down the hall and into the bar. On saxophone was Theo's great-uncle Cy, entertaining the waterlogged guests with his jazzy interpretation of the Pachelbel Canon. In his prime, Cyrus Knight had been a nightclub star in old Overtown Village, Miami's Little Harlem. The music calmed Jack, and it made him smile to see how quickly the friends of the bride and groom had transformed Sparky's into a worthy venue. The white canopy from the beach had been reconstructed beneath the vintage disco ball. Folding chairs covered the dance floor, bride side and groom side separated by a makeshift center aisle. Every chair was filled, not one of the 70-odd guests having decided to bag the wedding to dry off at home. Jack and Theo entered from the side, taking their places near a jukebox that hadn't worked since Reagan was president. Harry Switek shook his son's hand. At the height of his political career, back when Jack was just a newbie lawyer at the Freedom Institute, Harry had served 2 terms as Florida's governor. But it was his enduring office of notary public that empowered him to perform a wedding ceremony.
"Your grandmother is so proud," Harry said softly.
Many familiar faces were in the audience, but Jack's gaze was fixed on Abuela. There were tears in his grandmother's eyes, mostly joy, but surely some sadness that Jack's mother wasn't there. She'd died in childbirth. And it wasn't until Jack was a grown man that Abuela had found a way to leave Castro's Cuba. Abuela had made it her mission to give her gringo grandson, half Hispanic in blood only, a crash course in Cuban culture. A marriage outside the church could bump him down to about a C-. But there was an endless potential for extra credit upon delivery of great-grandchildren.